We are continuing Chapter 12, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And they had just finished with Snape's class, you know. "That was really unfair," said Hermione, consolingly, sitting down next to Harry and helping herself to shepherd's pie. "Your potion wasn't nearly as bad as Goyle's. When he put us in the flagon, the whole thing shattered and set his robes on fire." "Yeah, well," said Harry, glowering at his plate. "Since when has Snape ever been fair to me?" Neither of the others answered. All three of them knew that Snape and Harry's mutual enmity had been absolute from the moment Harry had set foot in Hogwarts. "I did think he might be a bit better this year," Hermione said in a disappointed voice. "I mean, you know," she looked carefully around. There were a half a dozen empty seats on either side of them, and nobody was passing the table. "Now that he's in the order and everything." "Poisonous toadstools don't change their spots," said Ron sagely. "Anyhow, I've always thought that Dumbledore was crack trusting Snape. Where's the evidence he ever really stopped working for you-know-who?" "I think Dumbledore's probably got plenty of evidence, even if he doesn't share it with you, Ron," snapped Hermione. "Oh, shut up, the pair of you," said Harry heavily, as Ron opened his mouth to argue back. Hermione and Ron both froze, looking angry and offended. "Can't you give it a rest?" he said. "You're always having a go at each other. It's driving me mad." Abandoning his shepherd's pie, he swung his school bag over his shoulder and left them sitting there. He walked up the marble staircase, two steps at a time, past the many students hurrying toward lunch. The anger that had just flared so unexpectedly still blazed inside him, and the vision of Ron and Hermione's shocked faces afforded him a sense of deep satisfaction. "Serves them right," he thought. "Why can't they give it a rest? Bickering all the time, it's enough to drive anybody up the wall." He passed the large picture of Sir Cadogan the Knight on the landing. Sir Cadogan drew his sword and brandished it fiercely at Harry, who ignored him. "Come back, you scurvy dog, stand and fight," yelled Sir Cadogan in a muffled voice from behind his visor. But Harry merely walked on, and when Sir Cadogan attempted to follow him by running into a neighboring picture, he was rebuffed by its inhabitant, a large and angry-looking wolfhound. Harry spent the rest of the lunch hour sitting alone underneath the trapdoor at the top of North Tower, and consequently he was the first to ascend the silver ladder that led to Sybil Trelawney's classroom when the bell rang. Divination was Harry's least favorite class after potions, which was due mainly to Professor Trelawney's habit of predicting his premature death every few lessons. A thin woman, heavily draped in shawls, and glittering with strings of beads. She always reminded Harry of some kind of insect, with her glasses hugely magnifying her eyes. She was busy putting copies of battered, leather-bound books on each of the spindly little tables with which her room was littered when Harry entered the room, but so dim was the light cast by the lamps, covered by scarves and the low-burning, sickly-scented fire, that she appeared not to notice him as he took a seat in his shadow. The rest of the class arrived over the next 5 minutes. Ron emerged from the trapdoor, looking around carefully. Spotted Harry and made directly for him, or as directly as he could, while having to wend his way between tables, chairs, and overstuffed poofs. "Hermione and me have stopped arguing," he said, sitting down beside Harry. "Good," grunted Harry. Hold on a sec. And we're back. "Hermione and me have stopped arguing," he said, sitting down beside Harry. "Good," grunted Harry. "But Hermione says she thinks it would be nice if you stopped taking out your temper on us," said Ron. "I'm not. I'm just passing on the message," said Ron, talking over him. "But I reckon she's right. It's not our fault how Seamus and Snape treat you."
"I never said it."
"Good day," said Professor Trelawney in her usual misty, dreamy voice. And Harry broke off, feeling both annoyed and slightly ashamed of himself. "Welcome back to divination. I have, of course, been following your fortunes most carefully over the holidays, and am delighted to see that all of you have returned to Hogwarts safely, as of course I knew you would. You will find on the tables before you copies of The Dream Oracle by Inigo Imago. Dream interpretation is a most important means of divining the future, and one that may very well be tested in your owl.
Not, of course,
that I believe examination passes or failures are of the remotest importance when it comes to the sacred art of divination. If you have the seeing eye, certificates and grades matter very little. However, the headmaster likes you to sit the examination, so. And her voice trailed away delicately, leaving them all in no doubt that Professor Trelawney considered her subject above sordid matters such as examinations. Turn, please, to the introduction, and read what Imago has to say on the matter of dream interpretation. Then divide into pairs. Use the dream oracle to interpret each other's most recent dreams. Carry on.
The one good thing to be said for this lesson was that it was not a double period. By the time they had all finished reading the introduction of the book, they barely had 10 minutes left for dream interpretation.
At the table next to Harry and Ron, Dean had paired up with Neville, who immediately embarked on a long-winded explanation of a nightmare involving a giant pair of scissors wearing his grandmother's best hat. Harry and Ron merely looked at one another glumly.
"I never remember my dreams," said Ron. "You say one."
"You must remember one of them," said Harry impatiently. He was not going to share his dreams with anyone. He knew perfectly well what his regular nightmare about a graveyard meant. He didn't need Ron or Professor Trelawney or the stupid dream oracle to tell him that.
"Well, I had one I was playing Quidditch the other night," said Ron, screwing up his face in an effort to remember. "What do you reckon that means?"
"Probably that you're going to be eaten by a giant marshmallow or something," said Harry, turning the pages of the dream oracle without interest. It was very dull work, looking at bits of dream in the oracle, and Harry was not cheered up when Professor Trelawney set them the task of keeping a dream diary for a month as homework. When the bell went, he and Ron led the way back to the ladder, Ron grumbling mildly.
"Do you realize how much homework we've got already? Bin set us a foot-and-a-half-long essay on giant wars. Snape wants a foot on the use of moonstones. Now we've got a month's dream diary from Trelawney. Fred and George weren't wrong about owl year, were they? That Umbridge woman better not give us any."
And then, when they entered the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom, they found Professor Umbridge already seated at the teacher's desk, wearing the fluffy pink cardigan of the night before and the black velvet bow on top of her head. Harry was once again reminded of a large fly perched unwisely on top of an even larger toad. The class was quiet as it entered the room. Professor Umbridge was, as yet, an unknown quantity, and nobody knew yet how strict a disciplinarian she was likely to be.
"Well, good afternoon," she said, when finally the class had sat down.
A few people mumbled good afternoon in reply.
"Tut tut," said Professor Umbridge. "That won't do now, will it? I should like, please, reply, good afternoon, Professor Umbridge. One more time, please. Good afternoon."
"Good afternoon, Professor Umbridge," they chanted back at her.
"There now," said Professor Umbridge sweetly. "That wasn't too difficult, was it? Ron's away. Quill's out, please."
Many of the class exchanged gloomy looks. The order "Wands away" had never yet been followed by a lesson they had found interesting. Harry shoved his wand back inside his bag and pulled out his quill, ink, and parchment. Professor Umbridge opened her handbag, extracted her own wand, which was an unusually short one, and tapped the blackboard sharply with it. Words appeared on the board at once. "Defense against the dark arts, a return to basic principles."
"Well, now, your teaching on the subject has been rather disrupted and fragmented, hasn't it?"
stated Professor Umbridge, turning to face the class with her hands clasped neatly in front of her.
"The constant changing of teachers, many of whom do not seem to have followed any ministry-approved curriculum, has unfortunately resulted in your being far below the standard we would expect to see in your owl year. You will be pleased to know, however, that these problems are now to be rectified. We will be following a carefully structured, theory-centered, ministry-approved course of defensive magic this year. Copy down the following, please."
She rapped the blackboard again. The first message vanished and was replaced by, Course aims. 1. Understanding the principles underlying defensive magic. 2. Learning to recognize situations in which defensive magic can illegally be used. 3. Placing the use of defensive magic in a context for practical use. For a couple moments, the room was full of the sound of scratching quills on parchment. When everyone had copied down Professor Umbridge's 3 course aims, she said,
"Has everybody caught a copy of Defensive Magical Theory by Wilbert Slinkhard?"
There was a dull murmur of assent throughout the class.
"I think we'll try that again,"
said Professor Umbridge.
"When I ask you a question, I should like you to reply, 'Yes, Professor Umbridge,' or 'No, Professor Umbridge.' So, has everybody got a copy of Defensive Magical Theory by Wilbert Slinkhard?"
"Yes, Professor Umbridge," rang through the class.
"Good," said Professor Umbridge. "I should like you to turn to page 5 and read chapter 1. Basics for beginners, there will be no need to talk."
Professor Umbridge left the blackboard and settled herself in the chair behind the teacher's desk, observing all of them with those pouchy toad's eyes. Harry turned to page 5 of his copy of Defensive Magical Theory and started to read. It was desperately dull, quite as bad as listening to Professor Binns. He felt his concentration sliding away from him. He had soon read the same line 6 times without taking in more than the first few words. Several silent minutes passed. Next to him, Ron was absentmindedly turning his quill over and over in his fingers, staring at the same spot on the page. Harry looked right and received a surprise to shake him out of his torpor. Hermione had not even opened her copy of the book. She was staring fixedly at Professor Umbridge with her hand in the air. Harry could not remember Hermione ever neglecting to read when instructed to, or indeed resisting the temptation to open any book that came under her nose. He looked at her questioningly, but she merely shook her head slightly to indicate that she was not about to answer questions, and continued to stare at Professor Umbridge, who was looking just as resolutely in another direction. After several more minutes had passed, however, Harry was not the only one watching Hermione. The chapter they had been instructed to read was so tedious that more and more people were choosing to watch Hermione's mute attempt to catch Professor Umbridge's eye and to struggle with Basics for Beginners. When more than half the class were staring at Hermione rather than at their books, Professor Umbridge decided that she could no longer ignore the situation.
"Did you want to ask something about the chapter, dear?"
she asked Hermione, as though she had only just noticed her. "Not about the chapter, no," said Hermione.
"Well, we're just reading now,"
said Professor Umbridge, showing her small pointed teeth.
"If you have other queries, we can deal with them at the end of class."
"I've got a query about your course aims," said Hermione. Professor Umbridge raised her eyebrows.
"And your name is?"
"Hermione Granger," said Hermione.
"Well, Miss Granger, I think the course aims are perfectly clear if you read them through carefully,"
Professor Umbridge said in a voice of determined sweetness. "Well, I don't," said Hermione bluntly. "There's nothing written there about using defensive spells." There was a short silence in which many members of the class turned their heads to frown at the 3 course aims written in the blackboard.
"Using defensive spells?"
Professor Umbridge repeated with a little laugh.
"Why, I can't imagine any situation arising in my classroom that would require to use a defensive spell, Miss Granger. You surely aren't expecting to be attacked during class."
"We're not going to use magic," Ron ejaculated loudly.
"Students raise their hands when they wish to speak in my class, Mr.
Weasley," said Ron, thrusting his hand in the air. Professor Umbridge, smiling still more widely, turned her back to him. Harry and Hermione immediately raised their hands, too. Professor Umbridge's pouchy eyes lingered on Harry for a moment before she addressed Miss Hermione.
"Yes, Miss Granger, you want to ask something?"
"Yes," said Hermione. "Surely the whole point of Defense Against the Dark Arts is to practice defensive spells."
"Are you a ministry-trained educational expert, Miss Granger?"
asked Professor Umbridge in her falsely sweet voice.
"No, but..."
"Well then, I'm afraid you are not qualified to decide what the whole point of any class is. Wizards much older and cleverer than you have devised our new program of study. You'll be learning about defensive spells in a secure, risk-free way."
"What use is that?" said Harry loudly.
If we're going to be attacked, it won't be in a...
Hand, Mr. Potter,
sang Professor Umbridge. Harry thrust his fists in the air. Professor Umbridge promptly turned away from him again, but now several other people had their hands up too.
And your name is?
Professor Umbridge said to Dean. Dean Thomas.
Well, Mr. Thomas.
Well, it's like Harry said, isn't it? Said Dean. If we're going to be attacked, it won't be risk-free.
I repeat,
said Professor Umbridge, smiling in a very irritating fashion at Dean.
Do you expect to be attacked during my classes?
No, but... Professor Umbridge talked over him.
I do not wish to criticize the way things have been run in the school,
she said in an unconvincing smile.
But you have been exposed to some very irresponsible wizards in this class, very irresponsible indeed. Not to mention,
and she gave a little nasty laugh,
extremely dangerous half-breeds.
If you mean Professor Lupin, piped up Dean Thomas angrily, he was the best we ever...
And, Mr. Thomas, as I was saying, you have been introduced to spells that have been complex, inappropriate to your age group, and potentially lethal. You have been frightened into believing you are likely to meet dark attacks every day.
No, we haven't, Hermione said. We just...
Your hand is not up, Miss Granger.
Hermione put her hand up. Professor Umbridge turned away from her.
It is my understanding that my predecessor not only performed illegal curses in front of you, he actually performed them on you.
Well, he turned out to be a maniac, didn't he? Said Dean Thomas hotly. Mind you, we still learned loads.
Your hand is not up, Mr. Thomas,
trilled Professor Umbridge.
Now, it is the view of the Ministry that theoretical knowledge will be more than sufficient to get you through your examination, which, after all, is what school is all about. And your name is?
She added, staring at Parvati, whose hand had just shot up. Parvati Patil, and isn't there a practical bit in our defense against the Dark Arts Owl? Aren't we supposed to show that we can actually do the counter-curses and things?
As long as you've studied the theory hard enough, there's no reason why you should not be able to perform the spells under carefully controlled examination conditions,
said Professor Umbridge dismissively. Without ever practicing them before? Said Parvati incredulously. Are you telling us that it's the first time we'll get to do spells will be during our exam?
I repeat, as long as you've studied theory hard enough.
And what good is theory going to be in the real world? Said Harry loudly, his fists still in the air. Professor Umbridge looked up.
This is school, Mr. Potter, not the real world,
she said softly. So we're not supposed to be prepared for what's waiting out there?
There's nothing waiting out there, Mr. Potter.
Oh, yeah, said Harry. His temper, which seemed to have been bubbling just beneath the surface all day, was reaching a boiling point.
Who do you imagine wants to attract children like yourselves?
Inquired Professor Umbridge in a horribly honeyed voice. Let's think, said Harry, in a mock thoughtful voice. Maybe Lord Voldemort? Ron gasped. Lavender Brown uttered a little scream. Neville flipped sideways off his stool. Professor Umbridge, however, did not flinch. She was staring at Harry with a grimly satisfied expression on her face.
10 points from Gryffindor, Mr. Potter.
The whole class was quiet and still. Everyone was staring at either Umbridge or Harry.
Now, let me make a few things quite plain.
Professor Umbridge stood up and leaned toward them. Her stubby-fingered hands splayed on her desk.
You have been told that a certain dark wizard has returned from the dead.
He wasn't dead, said Harry angrily. But yeah, he's returned.
Mr. Potter, do not make matters worse for yourself,
said Professor Umbridge in one breath without looking at him.
As I was saying, you've been informed that a certain dark wizard is at large again. This is a lie.
It is not a lie, said Harry. I saw him. I fought him.
Detention, Mr. Potter,
said Professor Umbridge triumphantly.
Tomorrow evening, 5 o'clock, my office. I repeat, this is a lie. The Ministry of Magic guarantees that you are not in danger from any dark wizard. If you're still worried, by all means, come and see me outside class hours. If someone is alarming you with fibs about reborn dark wizards, I would like to hear about it. I'm here to help. I'm your friend. And now you will kindly continue your reading. Page 5, Basics for Beginners.
Professor Umbridge sat down behind her desk again. Harry, however, stood up. Everyone was staring at him. Seamus looked half scared, half fascinated. "Harry, no," Hermione whispered in a warning voice, tugging at her sleeve. But Harry jerked his arm out of reach.
"So according to you, Cedric Diggory dropped dead of his own accord."
"So according to you, Cedric Diggory dropped dead of his own accord, did he?" asked Harry, his voice shaking. There was a collective intake of breath from the class, for none of them, apart from Harry and Ron and Hermione, had ever heard Harry talk about what had happened on the night that Cedric had died. They stared avidly from Harry to Professor Umbridge, who raised her eyes and was staring at him without a trace of fake smile on her face.
"Cedric Diggory's death was a tragic accident," she said coldly.
"It was murder," said Harry. He could feel himself shaking. He had hardly talked to anyone about this, least of all 30 eagerly listening classmates. "Voldemort killed him, and you know it." Professor Umbridge's face was quite blank. For a moment, he thought she was going to scream at him, and then she said in her softest, most sweetly girlish voice,
"Come here, Mr. Potter, dear."
He kicked his chair aside and strode around Ron and Hermione to the teacher's desk. He could feel the rest of the class holding its breath. He felt so angry he didn't care what happened next. Professor Umbridge pulled a small roll of pink parchment out of her handbag, stretched it out on the desk, dipped her quill into a bottle of ink, and started scribbling, hunched over so that Harry could not see what she was writing. Nobody spoke. After a minute or so, she rolled up the parchment and tapped it with her wand. It sealed itself seamlessly so that he could not open it.
"Take this to Professor McGonagall, dear,"
said Professor Umbridge, handing out the note to him. He took it from her, without saying a word, and left the room, not ever looking at Ron and Hermione, and slamming the classroom door shut behind him. He walked very fast along the corridor, the note to McGonagall clutched tight in his hand, and turned a corridor, and walked slap into Peeves the Poltergeist, a wide-faced little man floating on his back, in midair, juggling several inkwells. And maybe we'll stop there. And we'll continue finishing the chapter next time. I hope you like that kitten.
No, really, an adorable kitten. I love you so much. Good night, sweetheart. Sweet dreams. I love you.